This episode of the Kona Edge is brought to you by Wheel Science. If you're looking for world-class carbon wheels that are UCI approved, come with a lifetime warranty and shipped free worldwide, then check out Wheel Science. Get all the performance at half the price, and when you use the coupon code KONAEDGE at checkout, you'll get an extra 10% discount. To learn more, head over to thekonaedge.com/wheels to find out more, or click on the link in your podcast player now. That's thekonaedge.com/wheels.
Welcome to the Kona Edge, where you'll discover what the best triathletes in the world do to give them the edge.
Welcome on to this edition of the Kona Edge. My name is Brad Brown, and we head to Toronto in Canada now to catch up with our next guest. And it's a great pleasure to welcome Fiona Whitby onto the podcast. Fiona, welcome onto the Kona Edge.
Thank you very much, Brad. Great to be here.
I'm super excited to chat to you and talk a little bit about your sort of background and how you got into the sport. But before we talk triathlon, talk to me a little bit about life in Toronto. What do you do outside of the sport of triathlon?
Outside of the sport, my sport is quite close to in the sport, actually. I am a triathlon coach, but first, before that, I am a kinesiologist and an athletic therapist. So I've been in the athletic world for many years, treating a lot of injuries for many people. So an athletic therapist, for those who may not know, is similar to physio, but we're sport related, and we work with orthopedics. So we generally are with sport teams, and we deal with the athletic population. It doesn't exclude anybody. It's athletic people, whoever that may be, and that could be just someone who needs to walk every day, for example. But we do have an athletic viewpoint. And so that sort of led me, I would say my athletics led me into that career and led me down to the triathlon coaching career as well.
I was going to ask, what came first? Was it getting into sport that led you that way? How did that all come about?
Yeah, 100%. It was sport. I started cross-country running running in grade 7. My older brother is Nigel Gray, and he started running in school. And when I followed suit, when I got to school, the coach said, "Well, your brother can run. Can you?" And I said, "I don't know. Let's see." And yes, I could run. So that led me down, cross-country, track, Nordic skiing, and the whole sort of endurance capacity is what I did.
That's fantastic. No pressure having a sibling who's pretty good.
No pressure. It continues to today.
I love that. I was going to ask, it must be pretty competitive in your household growing up?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I mean, he was an athlete. You know, he's been an endurance athlete forever, and going to bed at 9 o'clock in the evenings, 8:30, 9 o'clock for that matter. So he didn't pave the way for me. You know, if I tried to stay up late, my mom would be like, "What are you, like, Nigel goes to bed early?" It's like, come on. So there's some competitiveness always. He used to say to me when we were walking to school, "If you want to walk with me, you have to keep up." And he's a fast walker. So I learned how to walk fast because I wanted to walk with my big brother to school. It was important.
And I'm sure you've used that in your athletic career down the line.
Yeah. Oh, definitely. Yes. Absolutely.
Yes. You mentioned the various sports. I mean, what would you say was your, I mean, did you love all of them? Or was there one in particular?
I did love all of them. Well, cross running was probably my forte when I was younger, growing up through to university. That was definitely my forte. I got into cycling in university. Went used to go mountain biking and just used to ride. I went to Queen's University in Kingston, Ontario, and there's just some beautiful trails and riding out there, and that's how I got into the sport of riding. And it wasn't really so running was my first thing, cycling was my second. Swimming came later when I was an adult, and actually with my boyfriend at the time, who is now my husband, he sort of said, "Hey, why don't you go swimming and why don't you try an Ironman and all this sort of thing?" And I thought, "I don't think I can swim. I don't think I can do that. That's not for me." Anyway, so long and short of it was I went to a master's program and essentially taught myself, you know, how to swim like a swimmer as opposed to just a beach swimmer. So that's where that led into the triathlon, basically.
Okay. Cross-country running and Ironman triathlon, as much as they're two athletic endeavors, they are worlds apart. I mean, from an endurance point of view, I mean, you've got to have some sort of endurance for cross-country, but it's totally different for Ironman. What led you towards the longer stuff?
You know, that's a good question. I probably, you know, pressure from, you know, friends and the triathlon community. I remember people asking me, you know, my brother was doing Ironmans, my now husband was doing Ironmans, and it was sort of like, well, are you going to do an Ironman? I was like, I said, nope. Not for me. I can't do that. That's way too long. I'm not going to do that. I was doing Olympics. You know, I was doing sprints. Not for me. Can't do that. And someone even said, well, you go to Kona one day. And I said, well, not if I don't do an Ironman. Like, no, obviously. And then if I do an Ironman, I'm probably not going to Kona. Like, probably not. That was sort of how I started my thought process. But it was really my husband who said in 2000, he said, let's sign up for an Ironman. And I said, I don't think I can do this. And he said, we've got a year. We've got a year. You can get ready in a year to do this. Because I was not unfit at the time, but I wasn't endurance, you know, fit in terms of, as you're saying, an Ironman type distance. So I said, don't tell anybody. Don't tell anybody about this, including my brother, who is a triathlon coach. I said, do not tell him. And so we didn't initially, we didn't say anything. And we trained and we trained and we trained. And lo and behold, 2001, Ironman Canada was my first one, and I did my first race, unbeknownst to many. Now, we did share it earlier on, and I got a big shocking, oh my gosh, you're my mother. You can't do that. And anyway, I proved her wrong, and I did. So that's how we started.
What a great story. And it sounds like your brother and your group of friends and your boyfriend, and who's now your husband, that sounds like the group of people that your parents used to warn you about.
Yeah, pretty much. Exactly. I mean, not that terrible of a group, but, you know, could be worse, right? But yes, exactly.
Yeah. Tell me about your experience in that first one.
Yeah, the first one was, it was interesting actually to say. So I really did have a year leading up to it. I trained the best that, you know, that I could at the time and that I knew about. And, you know, I was very excited going into it. It was Ironman Canada. I don't know what you know about that race, but it's just a wonderful race. I had been out to the race the year before and I was excited. It was just an iconic race and it's so exciting. I was beyond calm on the morning of. I had no butterflies. I was not nervous. I was ready to go. It was so exciting. It was such an interesting feeling to have such a long day, but to be not nervous like I would be at other races. And I think I count that too. It was a long day, you know, it's going to be a long day and there's preparation, you know, that's the knowledge. And there was no need for butterflies because you were just out there to swim, to bike and to run in such a beautiful location. So that's sort of how it was. And that's truly probably one of my most remarkable, memorable and calm race, I would say.
Has it stayed that calm in your career or as
no, definitely not. that's not true. I still can go into, you know, I get nervous in the days leading up to the race, but actually race morning, I'm a very calm person on that morning. You know, the work is done. It's just that moment of execution and enjoyment. And that's what I try to fulfill on race day. So
where does that calmness come from? Is it just knowing that you've done the work to get there and it's now a case of executing?
Yeah, I feel like that's part of it, even though I have gone into races where I don't necessarily feel, you know, my preparation has been as good as I would like, but I let it go. I let it go because there's nothing I can do in that moment. And all I can do is each moment, you know, going forward is I can do the best I can with what I have. And keeping in the back of my mind what my preparation was, knowing that, you know, that going too hard for you, the fitness you have is going to hurt down the road. So being calm about where you're at, that's really, you know, what I focus on. Nervous energy is not worth it. And especially in an Ironman event, being the length of time, I mean, you're out for hours. Nervous energy isn't a place. So I shelve it and put it away and just don't have it on race morning.
Some of us are out there for more hours than others.
Absolutely. I know. Absolutely. No question.
I'm talking about me, Fiona, not you.
No, that's what I mean. That's a whole other conversation. I have clients hours too. And I need a conversation with them. How do you do it for that long? I don't want to do it for that long. Yeah, exactly.
Did the transition from, you mentioned you had done a few sprints in Olympics. Did you struggle with that transition to a full Ironman?
No, I feel like I prepared. I started in 1998, I'd say, doing triathlons. And it was sort of now by, so 2000 was the registration for 2001. So, you know, it was 3 years. Nowadays, people do it in a month or, you know, a couple months, right? Like do a short ones and then they're doing long. You know, I felt like I had enough, you know, knowledge of the triathlon world and I was ready. I would say I was ready. And I'd say, but also having those months ahead of me in preparation really made me feel the transition was not that big of a deal.
And you mentioned in the build up or before Ironman was actually an option, you said Kona never. When did Kona first pop onto your radar?
That's a good question. So yeah, 2001, I did my first. That was quite a big challenge. So I had a time off. So I didn't do in 2002. The next one for me was, 2000 and oh gosh, now I'm gonna look at my list here. Sorry. Can't remember all my numbers. I've done 22 Ironmans now. So, I've got a few. So I think it was actually 2004. Technically 2004, I did Ironman Brazil and I won my age group and I got a Kona spot. So it was I'm sorry. That's not true. 2003, I did Ironman Placid, and it was 2004 in my third Ironman. I did get a Kona spot. So in my second one, I got a glimpse of being closer to that option. And I thought, wow, how about that? And then in my third one, I was an hour and a half faster and actually won the age group and I got the spot. However, I didn't take it.
Oh, really? I was going to ask, was that the goal? But obviously it wasn't. No. I mean, what's the story?
That was, I got engaged in 2003 at Ironman Lake Placid. My husband, my boyfriend at the time, he proposed at the finish line of Ironman Lake Placid 2003. And so our plan was to do, then we decided, I said yes. And then we decided, okay, we're going to get married in June of 2004. And we were going to do Brazil in 2004 as well, ahead of time. So it was about a month before the wedding. And, but we had decided our plan for our honeymoon was go to France to see the Tour de France in 2004. So that being a big trip, we decided that, you know, that was the plan. We didn't decide about Kona because that we didn't know that was an option. And then we did Brazil and then I did it. And then I got a spot. And then we had this big long discussion before the awards banquet or this, you know, before the roll down time, what are we going to do? But our, you know, we'd already planned our honeymoon and it was to France and it was a big trip. So we decided that I would forego the slot to Kona and work on my ability to do it again. So that's what we did.
That's fantastic. I'm going to ask you how difficult it was to turn that slot down, but I have to tell you a story hearing the Tour de France and that's where I've got a friend here in South Africa who's he's pretty well known in South African triathlon circles, Christian Fiesel. He's done pretty much every single Ironman South Africa, but a couple of years ago, and it was a week after Ironman South Africa, he ended up collapsing in his bathroom and it turned out he had a brain tumor a week after Ironman South Africa a couple of years ago. So had the thing removed is fine, but decided, you know what, life's short, I'm going to do as much as I can. So him and his wife decided they were going to, I think he was turning 40, he's going to go to the Tour de France. So they literally almost sell their kidneys and everything to afford to go to the Tour de France. And ends up as literally soon after he's paid for the trip to the Tour de France, he lands a Kona lottery slot.
Oh my God.
So they literally had to, I think he mortgaged his house in order to go to Kona, but managed to do both in 1 year, which is fantastic. Tell me how difficult it is to turn down a slot at Kona.
Yeah, it's it was humbling in some ways. Like I was proud of being I was proud of the chance that I got that I was able to qualify, but I was also very proud that giving it away or rolling it down or you know the opportunity I gave an opportunity to somebody else, and that was very meaningful because we know Kona slots are coveted. You know, people want them, people try hard to get them, and I really appreciated the fact that despite that I wasn't able to go, that I knew that it was making someone else super happy, you know, and having that opportunity. And so that was rewarding, even though it wasn't going to be me. I was still going to have a wonderful trip with my husband. So, you know, we would figure that role down. I figured at that point, I might have another chance at it.
That's my next question is, was there any doubt that you might not get another opportunity?
No, not at that point. Now we sort of figured that I still had a good, if I could keep my fitness up, I had a good chance to do it again. So and I have. So I have qualified six more times since then.
Tell me about the next one that where the goal was to obviously go back and pick up a slot.
Same place.
Same place.
Brazil again in 2006, though, a year in between. So 2006, I did it in Brazil again. So same place and qualified. And I took the spot.
Tell me about going to Kona.
It was exciting. So in 2005, my brother raced Ironman Canada, and he was third at Ironman Canada as a professional. So that was the first opportunity to go to Kona in 2005. And that whole him getting third, standing with him around in the podium and the awards, and then, sort of all of that, it was very inspiring. And that gave me the drive again to go to do Brazil again and to try and qualify and to get to Kona. So in 2005, I got to Kona as a spectator. And wow, it was truly impressive, truly amazing. I had a client that also raced that year, and I was, drinking the Kool-Aid of being wanting to be a part of that. So that was then my motivation to go, okay, let's make this happen again and try for it again. So that was my goal going into 2006.
It obviously wasn't a one and done. It gets under your skin, it's difficult to let it get away. Why is it so special? What is it about Kona?
It's Hawaii for one. That's one of the wonderful things about it. Hawaii has just this allure and this magic there. However, saying that, when I first arrived in 2005, I thought it was the weirdest place ever. It was dark, that lava was dark, it was barren and was strange. But that grows on you and you get used to what the Queen K offers and shows and has. And, there's just so many intriguing factors about it. So, and challenging, I think if you took that course and took all those elements away, the course isn't so bad, but then you add all those amazing elements that make it challenging or fast, but it's got so many variety to it. And I think that's the allure to it all.
I ask this question pretty much to everyone who comes on this podcast. What's the secret to having the perfect race at Kona?
Ha. Yeah. Wishing to the Hawaiian gods for whatever the word thing works for you. I don't know. To be honest, even the days when it's not that windy, which I did race this year in 2018, this past year, and it wasn't as windy by all means as compared to many other years, but it's hotter. It gets hotter when that wind doesn't blow. So you can't sort of say, "Oh, if it's not windy, then it would be really great." That's the secret. That's not it. Then it's just going in, satisfied with where your fitness is at, and executing to the best of your ability on that day. And Kona is Kona, and that's what you have to remember.
Do you feel like you've had the perfect day out in Kona?
No, I haven't. No, not yet.
What's still got to go right for you? I mean, I'm guessing you've come fairly close.
Yeah. So in 2007, I podiumed at Kona. 2007, I podiumed at Kona. And I was third in the age group in 2007. So that was very good. It wasn't my perfect performance. I had crashed that year in 2007, and I had broken my wrist and my collarbone, and I had surgery in my collarbone, and I had a plate put in. So my going into Kona I was a bit nervous and scared because of my broken parts, and I stayed in the swim. I stayed really wide. I stayed up to the back. I was very cautious. It was a race from behind, so to speak, where I got my courage up as I sort of went through the race. But I feel like I still didn't get to execute everything that I wanted to, how I wanted to. I was definitely cautious, but that worked in my favor as well. With what I was able to achieve on the run, which was great. But I still think there's something better for me there.
I'll ask it about Kona. Do you feel like you've had the perfect Ironman race? Because I mean, it's long. There's lots of moving parts, so to speak. Do you feel like you've strung one together that is, it's not going to get much better than that?
I do, actually. I do. In 2017, I did Ironman Texas. And that, from swim, bike to run, that was, well executed, definitely. I mean, it is my fastest time, but that's not kind of quite fair because Texas is a bit of it's a bit of a short course. And it's, it's a very flat course, which that's fine. And I like challenging courses, to be honest. I love Lanzarote. I love things where there's more challenge to it. But Texas was great. It's my fastest time, but I think what I feel the strongest about that was my run was the best run I've done. I executed that run just impeccably. And I'm so thrilled with how that went. And that's what stands in my mind as truly my best execution of a race.
Fiona, I'm going to ask you this question, and I'm going to ask you to answer it in two different ways. So I'm going to ask you this as Fiona Whitby, the athlete, and then Fiona Whitby, the coach. Let's start with the athlete. What is the secret as an athlete to qualifying and racing on the Big Island?
That's a very good question. Focusing on you, training with, training consistently ahead of time, you know, training consistently, not second guessing yourself nor your coach, but training consistently all the way through ups and downs, but just keep on training. That's really the foremost. You can't control what other people do. You can't control how they train, and you can't control how they race. You have to believe in yourself, in what you can do. And it may be your day and it may not be your day, but you have to always just believe in yourself.
And from a coach's perspective, would that answer be exactly the same, or would it be different?
No, pretty much. It's the same thing. I mean, I tell people you have to trust you. You have to trust in the process and how you got there. Whether you think you should have done more of this or less of that or whatever it might be, it's not really relevant at that point. You have to be able to believe and be strong. And the one thing about a long race like in an Ironman is, you know, you have to endure all the way. And it's the strong and the mental, the people who can be mentally strong all the way through, that's who survive. So that's the key. And especially on that run, you know, there are doubts. No, there's always doubts, but you have to fight it. And that's where you need to be key. And it's not over till you cross that line. That's the key. Even though you might be thinking you're not on pace. And we know that Ironman math is not very good for most people. We know that calculating times is terrible. So you just have to push on no matter what you think you're doing, because the truth is you don't know what's around you and you don't know what other people are doing. You don't know what's happening. So you have to just do what you can do right to the finish.
How difficult is it racing at the front end of the field? As you say now, you're not sure what's going on around you. Obviously in Kona is slightly different, but a lot of the other races aren't wave starts anymore. They're rolling starts. So you're not really sure who's in the lead, who's behind you, who's ahead of you. How difficult is it to race, particularly if you're chasing a slot and you need to sort of know where you are?
Yeah, it does make it challenging, that's for sure, because you're trying to imagine, you know, you try to get a glimpse on the bike, because often there's a time where you can, I mean, the swim, you obviously have no idea other than, you know, maybe seeing something, bike's gone on your rack. But on the bike, you try to get a glimpse to see where people might be. But that's where the whole racing to the finish line counts, because, you know, you have no idea if someone a couple of seconds behind you and they started behind you, like, did they pass you in the swim? You don't really know. So you have to just race by the clock and to that finish line. And whether you pass people or not is not necessarily the game changer in your day. You don't know, right? That's sort of it. So you just have to keep fighting as best you can.
And sometimes, well, I say sometimes, I'm guessing it's probably even more important, the mental side of it with that. It would be different if you could see your competitor 200 meters up the road and you're going to chase them down and you're hurting, but you can almost see the carrot. You can't do that now. So the mental side of it comes into play even more.
Yeah, well, you can in the sense that you do. You drive for that carrot no matter what, because you don't know the timing. And then that happened to me, in fact, in 2018 in Texas, where I didn't quite have the day I had in 2017. And, you know, I was pushing, struggling to push. And there was a girl, again, that I hadn't really seen all race. And she was ahead of me. And I just pushed and I pushed and I pushed in those last kilometers, because I didn't know where she did. She start behind me? Did she start ahead of me? Like, where was I in timing? I just had to get as many seconds past her as possible. And that got me into third place in that race in 2018. And in fact, and also got me a Kona spot, because it was top three that had spots in that race. And I didn't know that at the time.
Is there anything you do in training to build that mental capacity and mental strength?
I train with a lot of guys on the bike. So I'd say that that's sort of part of it. I find life, I don't know if that's not ignorant to women. It's just that I happen to have more men around to ride, and they're, and a lot of them are very good athletes, and a lot of them are Kona athletes themselves. So, you know, riding with them has definitely, you know, strengthened my ability and I find my drive. But, you know, I think I just have a bit of a tough mental, you know, I just kind of go, yeah, I can do this. Yeah, I can do this. And I fight that. And don't get me wrong, there's many times where I'm not feeling that great. And I can't necessarily fight it. So I do what I can. But, you know, I think with each discipline, you know, I get, swimming's not my forte. So that's just sort of get out of the water, survive the swim, get out, get on the bike, and now you can do your job. And that's where my mental toughness is. Be smart. I constantly say to myself, be smart. Be smart. Don't chase people, and don't get caught up with what other people are doing. And that's men or women, to be honest, in terms of racing. It's men or women, because that you can both get caught up in both ways. I just say to myself, be patient. You can do this. Be patient.
And it is a long day. Patience,
that is a long day.
patience does play a big part. And it's often, you see it so often, someone goes out and they chase someone, or they decide, this is it, we're going to make our move. And the wheels can come off if you don't time that right.
Oh, for sure. Absolutely. And I think a lot of that's ego, you know, people ego. It's like, I even tell my clients, like, you know, check your ego at the door. Like, you know, you're going to get men, women's, every different size, shape, and whatever is going to pass you or you're going to pass them. I said, but it doesn't mean anything. Like, you just got to do what you can do and don't get caught up in doing silly things that cost your day. And that's pacing. You know, that's like, the patience is a tough thing for, you know, A-type people, as we all know. But on that day, it's so important. Like, it is really the most precious gift you can have, is to be patient on a long endurance day like that.
Fiona, you've been around the sport for a while now, almost two decades.
Almost 2 decades, yeah.
What's the key to longevity in the sport? You mentioned often you see people come on, they burst onto the scene, within a few months they're doing an Ironman, but a lot of those people you never see again. For you, what's been your secret to first of all, still being able to do it after this amount of time, but still loving it?
Yeah. My husband, you know, he's been into triathlon since 1985, and he's done 32 Ironman races now. And it's us having the ability to do it together. You know, we've traveled the world with Ironman. We've been a lot of places, and we only really know how to travel if there's an Ironman race. And that's what we do. And our spare time, we do that together as much as we can. We do have a son. So, you know, now we're into more having to offset each other, and we can't necessarily train together, which I have to tell you, I miss a ton. Incredibly, the person I'd love to train with the most is my husband, and I can't do that as often anymore with him. But we still support each other and being able to get out the door. And also, I think we're being an athletic therapist, I have a knowledge of injuries and the body. And I'm very cognizant of that when I write programs and plans, to make sure that your body is so important to make this happen and to keep letting this happen. And now, I've had my fair share of crashes. Okay, not fair share. I've had 2 crashes, with consequences of those crashes, in physical injuries, but they've been different. They're traumatic injuries as opposed to, repetitive.
Yeah.
An overuse injury. Exactly. Exactly. So, you know, but I've learned to manage, you know, how do I manage and come back from those? I come back now in this Ironman world a few times now, and I have to say, mentally, it's getting a bit harder to keep coming back. I came back after pregnancy. I call that a comeback. And then I came back, you know, with my first crash in 07 and another crash. Another break in 2015 and another one in 2017. Yeah. I didn't get to do Ironman Hawaii in 2017 because I crashed the week before the race happened in Hawaii. So that was one of my challenging times, and coming back from that was definitely a challenge.
Let's talk about those comebacks, because I think it's something that we don't talk about often enough, and mm-hmm. I'm gonna be honest with you, I'm struggling with that at the moment. Yeah. It's been probably 2 or 3 years since my last Ironman, and I've really struggled to sort of get back into the swing of things. And I think a lot of it is mental, that we almost don't want to start from square one again, because we know what we can do an Ironman. Like, why do I need to start like run walking to get fit again? What advice would you give to someone who's maybe been around the sport, done a few Ironmans, and is desperate to get back after a couple of years break? How do they do it?
Take it slow. Take it consistent. Back to that. Just even if it's short stuff, build in consistently. If you try to jump in with a type of Ironman training, you're just gonna go, you know, I don't want to do it. And as you said, because you've done it, you've been there before, you know what it takes, which is makes that challenging because there is a lot to put in that package to make that happen. But it's okay knowing that half an hour counts. Half an hour of a ride, half an hour run, it counts. And as you build that back up so that you feel, you know, it's not different than someone even learning to run. You know, if they phase out because they can't handle the training. But it's the same thing after 2 weeks, after 3 weeks, you're like, oh yeah. Oh, I like that. I love my bike. Oh my gosh. You know, but you know, don't tell yourself to go do 4 hours when sitting on the saddle hurts, literally hurts because you haven't done it. You know, take it slower and do the shorter work ahead of time. Don't have a goal that in 6 months you're going to do it. If you've been not doing it for a while, you know, build yourself up so you enjoy the process. Enjoy the process.
I love that, Fiona, and you speaking to me because that's exactly where I am right now, and that's all I'm focusing on. And I think this is a good lesson. I'm just focusing on turning blocks green. That's what it is. I don't need to hit numbers. I just need to show up and do the session, and it's not long stuff. I did an hour on the bike tonight, and it was amazing. For the first time in a while, I was on my bike, and I thought, you know what, this is cool. Like, I love this.
I feel like
I'm getting my mojo back, which is good.
Yeah, and you enjoy it. And that's the same thing. It's just don't try to go, oh, an hour and a half or 2 hours or 3 hours. And you like get halfway through and you're thinking, oh, this is awful. I hate this. I don't want to do it. That's no fun. Because, you know, the truth is this is a hobby. You know, this is pleasure. This is enjoyable. This is what you want. You want to do this. And you want to do this as long as you can do this. I mean, we don't know how long we'll continue, but, you know, we're almost 20 years. Well, I'm almost 20 years in for Ironman. My husband actually was 20 years last year in doing Ironman. So, you know, so we got a few, hopefully more years to go. And you just got to keep it, you know, keep a steady momentum. And also knowing that because you've done it before, that process doesn't have to be the same. That's another thing with my clients, they've seen it one way. And especially when someone does their first Ironman, you know, you are so scared of your first Ironman that you do so much training and so much dedication to it that it seems impossible when you want to do 2, 3, 4, 5 or whatever number you're at, because you think that you have to go back and do all of that, what you did before. But the truth is, once you've done a couple of them, you don't need to do the same amount of work as you did before. Consistency is key, but you don't have to put in the same amount of hours.
Yeah. And consistency over time. I think that's an important point too. Having 2 or 3 or 4 seasons back to back makes such a big difference.
Sure. Absolutely. Yep.
You can't buy those, unfortunately.
No, you can't. Unfortunately, no. Trust me. I know. I'm coming back from the bottom many times now, and it's like, okay, can I not just go back and get that fitness from back then and use it? Anyway.
Fiona, you've raced, as you said, you've been lucky enough to race around the world.
Yeah.
This is a tough question. What's your favorite? If someone's sitting here going, you know what, I want to do a destination race, what would you recommend?
Well, there's a few. Do I have to narrow it down to one? There's a few. I don't know. There's a few. You know, Brazil was one of my first favorites. That was one of my early ones, and we did it a few times. Love that race. The latter one to that one, which was always a bucket list for us to do, was Ironman Lanzarote. Love it. Beautiful. They changed the course this year. So it's different. It's not what it was for their other 25 years that they had before, or, you know, they've had a few little bit of changes, but this year they changed the course for their Ironman Lanzarote, which is interesting, which would probably make it a little more potentially doable for more people. It was a pretty challenging bike ride on that Lanzarote course. Gorgeous, beautiful, amazing, but definitely challenging. Very challenging. So I'd say maybe they've made some changes now to make it more reachable for more people.
If you could go back and start all over again, would you do anything differently?
That's a good question. Yeah, I think that there was a few years I decided to become a pro, and I raced to Ironman as a pro for a few years, 2 years. Given the chance again, I would embark on that opportunity earlier. I did it after I tried to have a child. We didn't have any success, and I was frustrating and challenging and sort of somewhat depressing. So my avenue to kind of recourse that, because I couldn't make that work at the time, was to race professionally. And when I did it, I had been off for a little bit of training because I was trying to, chemically have a child essentially. And So I wasn't physically as fit as I needed to be to do that world. And I wished I had the opportunity to be fitter, to really try to be, see what I could do as a professional athlete. I tinkered at the back end, and it was lovely to get the experience. It was amazing to get the experience, actually, because I had that opportunity to see what that world was like, but I wished I had better physical opportunity at the time. That would be what I change.
Okay. And you've raced many, 22, I think you said. What are you most proud of?
Oh, that's an interesting question. What am I most proud of? I'm probably, my best race was at Texas. So I'm not sure that's my most proud of. Yeah, I'm very proud of that race. But I'd probably say this past year, Ironman Hawaii 2018, because the year before I had crashed and therefore didn't start. And I came, I had a hard time coming back mentally. I struggled. I was in peak fitness in 2017. I had a phenomenal year leading up to 2017. I was also in my age group, 45 to 49, the top all world athlete for that year going into Kona 2017. So I was having a fantastic year. I was super happy about it. And then I crashed. And then I went down, figuratively went down. And, my plan initially was not to come back in 2018. I wasn't going to race an Ironman in 2018. So I mentally struggled because my plan was I had this amazing year in 2017. I'm going to top it off with Ironman at the top of the year in 2017. And I'm going to lay low for the nap for 2018. That was my plan, lay low. And that's not really what happened, because I just felt like I needed to have this, I needed to try and fight back again and come back again and do that comeback for 2018. I did Texas again. I did Tremblant as well, actually. And then I did Ironman Hawaii. They weren't my best races. They were solid races. It was a struggle getting my fitness back. And I think it was a mental game. So I feel I'm most proud of Hawaii because I struggled with myself to get to the door again. It wasn't the same excitement to me. And I think it was because I was so sad about missing the 2017 opportunity that, knowing that, again, this whole not having all that fitness, I didn't let that go, I guess. That was probably the thing. But I am proud of where I came and where I got to in 2018. It was humbling. I didn't race in the way that I would have thought I would have liked to have raced. And that was very humbling. The girls were amazing, and I definitely didn't have that fitness. But I'm proud. The proud of the drive, proud of the finish, proud of that success of that day.
What do you still want to achieve?
Oh, that's a good question too. Yeah, that's a good question. I'm not sure what that is, actually. I'm not even sure I know what I want to achieve at this point. I've sort of crossed off a lot of boxes checked off a lot of boxes in my race. I feel like in Hawaii, I feel like my next goal in my Hawaii is to podium again. That's what I feel like. I feel like I got robbed of that in 2017. I feel like I went into that year or that event really, really on top and really ready to go. And, and that would have been my 10-year of my third place podium. And I was feeling very special about that. And I feel like I want to try for that opportunity again. 2018 wasn't going to be the time. I knew that, but I feel like there's still that chance for me again to do that and have that day.
Fantastic. Fiona, it's been great catching up. I loved chatting. I look forward to talking about the individual disciplines, but we'll save that for next time out. Thanks for your time on the Kona Edge today.
Thank you very much, Brad. Fantastic to talk to you.
If you've enjoyed this episode of the Kona Edge, I want to invite you to check out the Coach Parry Training Club. The Coach Parry Training Club is the essential resource for anyone at any stage of their triathlon journey. Whether you're just starting out in the sport and training for your first sprint distance race, or if you've been around the block a few times and are looking to take your Ironman performance to the next level, then the Coach Parry Training Club can help you. Developed by double Olympic and Commonwealth Games triathlon coach Lindsay Parry and myself, the Coach Parry Training Club is the go-to online platform for your training needs. It's like having a coach in your pocket. Get 20% off when you join the Coach Parry Training Club by using the coupon code KONA at checkout. Head over to thekonaedge.com/coach or click on the link in your podcast player now. That's thekonaedge.com/coach.
We hope you enjoyed this episode of the Kona Edge. Don't forget to connect with us on social media. Simply search for the Kona Edge.